The Medal of Leadership is definitely tested during times of difficult circumstances, of disasters, of attacks, of opposition. And in our study in the book of Nehemiah, we certainly have seen his mettle tested over and over and over again as he faced a variety of hardships. He was a person that was driven, discerning, diplomatic, daring, and devout. In short, he was focused on what he was called to accomplish through his relationship with God. And he was focused on getting the job done, and he was focused on allowing God to be God and not trying to take God's place. He dealt with crises, opposition, and hardships both outside the walls of Jerusalem and within the walls of Jerusalem. And it was his mettle that was tested and proven solid. It is a lesson for us, no matter what role of leadership we may find ourselves in, whether a person is a CEO of a major corporation, or a head of a department, or a pastor of a church, or a teacher of a classroom, maybe the head of a family, maybe just a small work-study group, or maybe just leading a friend through a difficult time. It is his focus that should encourage us and inspire us, no matter what role of leadership we are at. So I'd like you to open up to Nehemiah chapter 6, and we'll see his latest challenge. If you remember in chapter 4, the surrounding area, the people were hearing about the walls being built. They were upset. They were seeking ways to confuse and to stop the work. In chapter 5, he was dealing with the wealthy oppressing the poor, and he spoke on behalf of the poor and told the rich to stop exploiting them. And he himself demonstrated a spirit of generosity and of how he lived. And so we come to the latest challenge as Nehemiah writes in his journal that we call the Book of Nehemiah, and it says this. Now, so when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of our enemies heard that I had built the wall and that there was no breach left in it, although up to that time I had not set up the doors and the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent to me, saying, "Come, let us meet together at Hakephirim in the plain of Ono." But they intended to do me harm. So here are these people who had opposed it from the very beginning. We see Sanballat and Tobiah in chapter 2, not excited about them coming back, not excited about them rebuilding the walls. We've seen them trying to confuse and thwart the building. Now that they've heard that there is no more breach in the walls, and they probably haven't even heard yet that the gates were not quite hung, though Nehemiah makes that note, they're beside themselves. They're upset. They have to figure out, we can't stop them. They keep working. They keep getting this job done. So now instead of trying to deal with the entire nation, they're trying to get rid of their leader. So if they could just get rid of Nehemiah, if they can just do something to compromise him, then maybe then the work will stop. Maybe then the rebuilding of Jerusalem will come to a grinding halt. So they said, "Well, come, let us meet together." So kind of a peace envoy, asking him to come and to meet with them. But he recognized that they intended to do harm. Well, how does he know? Well, personal history with these people. They have not been cooperative from the very beginning, the very first time he met with them. He has known what they've been up to. They've been very clear. And now all of a sudden, as the work is about to be completely tied up and completely finished, they are trying to sidetrack him. And they're seeking to do him harm. And verse 3 says, "And I sent messengers to them, saying, I'm doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you?" Which must have just made their heads explode. Because that's exactly what they wanted to happen. They wanted him to come and the work to stop. And he says, "Yeah, I'm not going to come. I got this great work to do. I have a lot more important things on the table." He was focused on what God had called him to do. And he recognized that just because somebody wants to talk to him doesn't mean he has to say, "I'm going to talk to you." And leaders understand that. Leaders understand there are people who just want to come sometimes just to waste your time. They'll say they want to talk, they want to get something off their chest, but they're not about that. They really just want to waste your time or try to convince you of their point of view. They really have some hidden agenda. And here, their hidden agenda was actually to cause harm. And he recognized there is no sense in dealing with them. And there's just some people a good leader knows that it's disastrous to talk to them. Even in our current political mess that we find ourselves in the Middle East, comes because two presidents, one Republican, one Democrat of recent time, made a deal with the Taliban, believing that they could be trusted. And both have found out they couldn't be trusted. But they stuck with the deal. Good leaders would know better. And he goes on and he says, "And they sent to me four times in this way. And I answered them in the same manner." They just thought, he's got to come. We're going to keep sending him the same request. And they just probably got more and more frustrated. And we know this because look what they did the fifth time. "In the same way, Sanballat, for the fifth time, sent his servant to me with an open letter in his hand." So they have been doing things through the typical proper channels, sending a message directly to Nehemiah, asking him to come. They were following all the protocols. Now they're taking an approach of open letter, something that is public. And if and when something when you go outside the channels, what are you trying to do? You're trying to force your hand and force the person to do what you want them to do. "And it was written, it is reported among the nations," so basically gossip, "and Geshem also says it, that you and the Jews intend to rebel." Okay, rebellion is a big word. When a government feels threatened, when it feels like a group of people are going to rebel, they tend to react very strongly to that. And this is the exact same thing that was mentioned in the book of Ezra to King Artaxerxes, that this nation was going to end up in rebellion. And he had ordered the walls to be stopped being built, and the surrounding nations came down, forcibly stopping them to work, but also tearing down the walls and burning the gates. So it worked before, so they're doing it again. "That is why you're building a wall. And according to these reports," we should put that in the quotations, "you wish to become their king." So not only are you the governor, but you have figured out that you're going to become the king, the new dictator. You're just doing this for yourself. Everybody's talking about that. "And you also have set up prophets to proclaim concerning you in Jerusalem, there is a king in Judah." So basically they're saying they hired, that Nehemiah has hired prophets. He's cozied up to the religious community in order to further his political career. He's trading favors with them in order for them to endorse. Now, it's important to pay attention to that because we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. But this is what they were spreading out there, that this was actually happening. And now the king, and they're referring to Artaxerxes, will hear of these reports. So now come and let us take counsel together. So they're saying, you know, everybody's talking about it. And guess what? King Artaxerxes is going to do exactly what he did before. And he's not going to put up with it a second time. This is going to get back to him. And you're going to be in really big trouble. And, you know, people probably will know now that this is an open letter. Even they're trying to let the people of Israel think, oh, is he hiring prophets? So they're trying to even create doubt within the walls. So, you know, so now come and take counsel. What they're hoping is if Nehemiah says, I'm not going to take counsel with you, they can go, aha, see, he's hiding something. Because that's what people do. If you will not meet with them because you recognize that it's not going to be of any good, that it's going to be a waste of time and distract you from what you're supposed to be doing, they're just going to accuse you of not wanting to talk. And guess what? It is okay. So I'm not talking to that person. And Nehemiah responded. Responded a little stronger this time because they made things public. Then I sent to him saying, no such thing as you say have been done. You are inventing them out of your own mind. And that's what people like to do. If they can't get you on what they think that you're doing, they will make up even more things to try to discredit you. And that is what they're about now. They're trying to create a fear in him. Look what it says. For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking their hands will drop from the work, and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. For they all wanted to frighten us. They have decided that they would hear, oh, King Artaxerxes is going to hear about this. We better do something. We better show that we're in line. So it's not just Nehemiah they're trying to frighten, but they're trying to frighten the whole thing. But Nehemiah, he just says, you're making it up. And then he prays, God, strengthen my hands. Don't let me falter. He continued to stay focused. And really, they were underestimating his character and the culture that he has created within Jerusalem. You know, there's a lot of talk lately about culture as we're dealing with the Middle East. And I heard this one man was explaining some things that I thought was really interesting. You know, we have heard a lot that we did not understand the culture as we went over into the Middle East. And there's a lot of truth to that. We did not understand that their culture. But on the other side, they didn't understand our culture either. Because the terrorists actually thought if we ran airplanes into their buildings, the Americans would cower. Kind of like the Japanese did in World War II. They thought we would just kind of back away. They didn't realize it. All they did was get our dander up and our resolve. Even dealing with Iraq, this one man was talking about that here in the United States was wounded, still reeling from its wounds and taking every threat serious. But in the Middle East, people like Saddam Hussein would overplay their hand. They would say they have more things that they did and be threatening in order to keep other countries from attacking them. Not realizing we actually took that serious. And see, there's this idea of understanding cultures. They certainly didn't understand the culture. But Nehemiah understood their culture. He knew exactly what they were up to. Because he was discerning. And he was focused on the task at hand. Verse 10. Now when I went into the house of Shemaiah, the son of Delilah, the son of Mehetabel, which, why do they just not give us American names, right? Okay, so, and who was confined to his home, he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple. Let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. They are coming to kill you by night. So we don't know exactly why he was confined. Maybe there's a health reason. He did have some connection to the temple. He was a religious leader. We'll see that he was considered a prophet. And he's telling Nehemiah, you know, we got to go to the temple. We need to lock the doors because they're coming. They're coming tonight. So he's actually given a prophecy to Nehemiah. Look at verse 11. But I said, should such a man as I run away? And what man such as I could go into the temple and live? I will not go in. So what is he saying? Should I run away? I've been preaching that God's going to take care of us. I've been telling people to have faith, to have courage. And am I to be a coward and run away? Is it plausible that they might come and murder him? Yeah, that's a possibility. But should he run away and he just would have nothing to do with it? Plus, he said, I can't go into the temple. I'm not a priest. Only the priests are allowed in the temple. You're asking me to violate the word of God. You're asking me to go in there where it'll rupture my relationship with the priest. And the people will be thinking, who does he think he is? That he can just go in running away and into the temple anytime he wants to. Then look at verse 12. And I understood and saw that God had not sent him, but he had pronounced a prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sambalah had hired him. Now remember, they were accusing Nehemiah of buying off prophets. Why did they accuse him of that? Because that's what they do. And a lot of times you see that. People like to accuse other people of doing things that they have done. Because they just expect it. Well, I do it. They probably do it too. For this, and he goes on, he says, and for this purpose he was hired, that I should be made afraid and act in a way and sin. So he's trying to get me to be all worked up. And so they could give me a bad name in order to taunt me. So if we can't stop, if we can't do something through diplomatic ways of getting him out and hurting him, if we can't frighten him, you know, by spreading rumors, boy, nothing works better than giving, you know, slander. And they've been saying things over and over again because that's what happens. It only takes like three times of saying something where people start to think, oh, it must be true. And that's exactly what they were doing. And what were they doing? They were trying to brand him as a coward. There is nothing worse than a person who is successful and a leader to be branded a coward. There's a man named Bruce Ismay. Anybody know who Bruce Ismay is? Yeah. You'll know him. And he, a very powerful man in England at the turn of the 1900s. He was the chairman of the White Star Line. The White Star Line was what he ran, and he was the brainchild of this trio of ships, one that was called Gigantic, one was going to be called Titanic, and then the other one was going to be called Gigantic. And he was on board the Titanic and pressing the captain to go faster and faster across the Atlantic, even though there were ice warnings. And when the ship hit the iceberg and was sinking and they were down to the collapsible lifeboats, that means all the other lifeboats were gone, and they were down to two, he got in one, even though they were reserved strictly for women and children. When the Carpathia, the RMS Carpathia came and rescued them, he withdrew to a private stateroom and would not associate with any of the passengers. At the trial of the Titanic, the people were asking him, why did you get in the lifeboat? It's just women and children, because there was no women and children around. The eyewitnesses who survived said that is not true. He eventually resigned within a year and spent the rest of his life, next 20 years of his life, in seclusion because he was branded a coward. In verse 14, remember Tobiah and Sanballat, O my God, according to these things that they did, and also the prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets who wanted to make me afraid. So instead of retaliating, coming back with other accusations that were not true, Nehemiah stayed focused and said, God, I'm just going to trust you to deal with this. And here's people that we know. He's learning who's on their side. And he is praying about it and asking God to take care of it. He's not stooping to their level. Verse 15. So the wall was finished, all 1.5 miles of it, all the way around. Now the gates are set. On the 25th day of the month, Elul, in 52 days, they cleared the rubble, they built the walls, they reset the, you know, they redid the gateposts, they reset the gates. Where are they today on road construction, right? This is the kind of people we want, to be able to build things quickly. And look at it. And when all of our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. The people were doing what they were supposed to do, but things were going so smoothly that they recognized that God's hand was upon it. Not only people in the walls, but the people outside the walls are going, yeah, this is a little different. We didn't think they could do this. Their God must be at work with them. And now they are afraid. You see, Nehemiah's prayers are coming true. He keeps asking God to take care of it. Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah, remember, there are a group of nobles who didn't want to work. Then there's probably the same nobles who were exploiting the poor. Now, here we are again. Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah. And Tobiah's letters came to them. So they're having communication back and forth. There's a connection there. For many in Judah were bound by oath to him because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Era, and his son Jehohanan had taken the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechia, as his wife. So Tobiah wasn't really an outsider, not necessarily an insider, but not completely an outsider. Tobiah is a Hebrew name. He had some connections there. He is married into some significant families. He kind of embedded himself. And he's not a good guy. But notice what these nobles did. And also they spoke of his good deeds in my presence. So anytime Nehemiah is hanging around the nobles, talking to them, they would say, yeah, you know, this reminds me of Tobiah. Oh, what a great guy. Oh, he'd be a great leader. Oh, you should listen to him. He's got some good advice. He thinks we should do this. So they were just parading Tobiah to him. But they also reported my words to him. Oh, Tobiah would be really good. Yeah, I don't think so. So they were letting Tobiah know everything that was going on. They were spying for him. And they were trying to grease the skids to let this guy slither his way in to Nehemiah's sphere of influence. And that happens. People who have agenda, they are always trying to slither themselves in. It could be in a corporation, it could be at a school, it could be at a church, it could be, you know, in a community, people come alongside and talking about how great they are. You know, whenever I'm around people and they, you know, spiritually, and they start talking about how great their prayer life is and how great they are and how wonderful, you know, they're, you know, and I'm not talking about that they're just thankful to God. I'm talking about that they sound like they actually are God's advisors. You know, where they just say, yeah, I just wave my hands and things happen. I've actually had people kind of say that. I just kind of pray and wave my hand, and all of a sudden things open, doors open magically to me. Like, really? Can you open that door for me? I just need to see that. I'm a little bit of a skeptic. When people are bragging about themselves a little bit too much, red flags always go off for me. So this is what's happening. And then when Tobiah would get the reports, he'd send me letters to make me afraid. I heard what you said. Oh, I know what you're doing. I've heard about this plan. And it's unsettling to a leader sometimes when he looks at things and goes, wow, they're learning everything that we're doing. Now, I know when I was reading about General Grant, some of the newspaper men from the North would eavesdrop on the battle plans for the next day or two, you know. And Grant would see them slipping out of camp. And he learned early on if they slip out of camp, they actually printed the battle plans in the papers. And the Confederates would find out about them. So Grant just learned if he catches them eavesdropping, he detained them for a few days. You know, leaders stay focused on what is important. They stay focused on what God has called them to do. They stay focused on what God does and leaves what God, the things that pertain to God, and the things that God has called them to do, they fulfill it. And as leaders, wherever we find ourselves, we need to find ourselves focusing, devoted to what God has called us to do.